care about Bloomberg. Don't care about the FT. Don't care about that or that or that. I do care about this, though. The music's starting and we've got to go. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. Making today make sense is what we do every day of the week, except weekends. We take weekends off.
We definitely do. We super duper are into work-life balance. I'm Molly Wood. It's great to be here. It's Thursday, which we sometimes refer to as hollowed out shell Thursday. I'm going to say it was worse earlier in the week. Maybe I'm numb to the parade of terrible that is the news lately.
I think there's a difference between just being cranky, which I definitely was like on Monday and Tuesday, versus being like hollowed out. And so, you know, I'll take cranky any day because that's more fleeting, I think.
Oh, yeah. I think cranky's totally fine. Yep, I agree. I think that hollowed out is a whole different sense of hopelessness about humans and their behavior. Nope, yep, you're right. I'm there. Yeah, no, I'm totally there.
Okay. Anywho. So the way it goes, a little bit of news, a little bit of make me smile, and then 15 minutes later, we're gone. So let us come on say, as they say on Paris.
That's right.
Enjoy it. Came from. I don't know.
Enjoy it. Comme vous pouvez.
That's right. All right, you go.
I'm obsessed with digital currency. I'm obsessed, not the crypto kind, because I think it's been so fascinating over just the past couple of weeks to watch what the Ripple effect, no pun intended, because Ripple is indeed a cryptocurrency. That was a high-level nerd joke, friends. It's been interesting to watch the Ripple effect of cryptocurrency as it, you know, becomes this huge inflated asset class, as like meme stocks start to all of a sudden take on enough money that they can move the market when they rise or fall, and as they start to gain stature, even in terms of, like we were talking about yesterday, their potential as a financial system undermining currency. Like, we're getting closer to the point where we're starting to think, like, wait, what if we did start to use these as money? And what if it did decentralize and destabilize the financial system? And, you know, what if we couldn't control that at all? And then on top of that, you have China recently introducing a digital version of its yuan, which is, like, in no way a cryptocurrency. It is not decentralized. It's 100% controlled by the Chinese central bank. But
can we stop here for a brief tutorial on the differences between crypto and digital currencies?
Yes, definitely. I mean, a digital currency is, I mean, it's kind of arguably what we have now in most cases, right? When you move your money around, not completely, but when you move your money around, it's digital. This is a digital currency is just an all digital, no paper or coin version of your central bank issued currency. And that is what China is creating with the digital yuan. And then there's cryptocurrency, which is decentralized. And by that, we mean it's created not by any one entity or controlled by any one entity. Any, you know, miner over here might create one. Mm-hmm. A miner over here might create one. You can have multiple different types. It is always constantly in the process of creation by many, many different parties. And no one can kind of like keep an eye on all of it.
Gotcha.
So China created this digital yuan. And at first, the United States was like, no big deal. We don't really care. Like, they're going to do that. But, you know, it wouldn't work like that in the United States because, for one thing, citizens probably don't want a digital currency that you can completely surveil. Like, this is, I mean, if you want a surveillance state, make your money digital so that you can see everything that everyone does with it all the time. In fact, apparently the amount of paper money in use in China has been on the rise as a result of that factor. But it also means, we did an interview with Jennifer Pak, our China correspondent, about this, that China can start sending money around in ways that avoid the global financial system and could potentially help it evade, like, sanctions. It's complicated, and I don't totally understand it. We should probably do an episode about it, but there's the SWIFT. Actually, Kai probably knows. You probably know. The SWIFT thing, which I guess is, like,
which
some
is
international
clearinghouse.
Help.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah, okay, that. So they can use this digital yuan to, like, move money around and avoid that. So a big part of it is, it could undermine the economic tools that the United States in particular uses to keep people in line. And then some other countries like Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates and Hong Kong are thinking like, hey, China, let's team up on maybe some ways to move this money around just between us. And between that and kind of all the cryptocurrency pressure, I think it's very fascinating that today Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell was like, issued a quote, according to Reuters, unusual video message on Thursday.
It was so weird. It looked like a hostage video. Can I just tell you? It was so
weird.
It was just, it was Powell straight to camera. So I saw it floating around on Twitter, and then I went to the Fed's page, and there it is. And it's just, it's like a video statement, but it looked for all the world like a hostage video. Powell straight to camera, reading a statement, you know, completely deadpan. It was just, it was the weirdest thing. I'm like, why are they doing this now? It was so bizarre. Truly it was. But the upshot is, he said,
it's fascinating.
Yeah.
The upshot is,
he
was like,
he had to do it like right now, right?
Right.
He was like, I got to do this right now.
That's what I want to know.
And you're like, why, Jay? I don't get it. Yeah.
See, I'm so glad that you find this. I really was like, what is this? Because then all of a sudden he laid out a clearer timetable. I mean, literally, I think it was just last week when we did this interview with Jennifer, and I put in the related links a thing about how Powell was like, we're going to take our time with this one. Right. We're not worried about this. And all of a sudden, boom, hostage video. Here's a clearer timeline. Yep. We are thinking about it. And P.S.,
we're
cryptocurrency, stablecoins.
White paper's coming out this summer. Yeah, all this stuff.
Yeah. Yep. I just think it's really interesting there has been a lot of speculation that the country that creates a digital currency that is super easy to move around, that can be used for remittances, that is, you know, cheaper to interact with, will be in an incredibly strong position. And China basically just threw down the gauntlet. And I just think it's fascinating that now Powell's like, whoa.
I completely agree that there's a first mover advantage, unless you are a non-transparent, totalitarian, not a democratic capitalist state, right? Because if you're going to go all in on the Chinese currency, digital currency, then you're going all in on China knowing exactly what you're doing. And ain't nobody going to do that, right?
Yeah. Which explains why there might be dual pressures. One, from the threat of cryptocurrency actually becoming currency, and or in the case of Ethereum, which is built more to have actual financial tools that can replace big chunks of the financial system. Yep. There's that threat. And then maybe also international pressure to create something to counter the digital yuan, maybe. I don't know. Like, clearly something's going on behind the scenes and people are a lot more worried this week than they were last week, which is always both fascinating and slightly scary.
And it's funny because, just one last word on this hostage video, the Fed media shop is usually pretty sharp, right? I mean, for 10, 12 years now, they've been really grooming Fed chairs to be more open and more transparent. Ben Bernanke, 13 years ago, whatever the hell it was, went on 60 Minutes. And Powell's been out there, Yellen's been out there. And now this one came out of nowhere. And you're like, this is just weird, man. It's just weird.
Fascinating.
Just weird.
I mean, say what you will about Bitcoin. It's pushing. It's pushing levers.
Yeah. For sure. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it's doing.
Or buttons.
Okay. I've got two reasonable quickies. The first one is, no, come on, you guys. Morgan Stanley announced a little reorg today, and they set up the succession race to replace James Gorman when he leaves in 3 years. He's the CEO of Morgan Stanley. And here's the best line of the day that I saw on Twitter, and I would credit it if I could. So what Morgan Stanley has done is line up four middle-aged white dudes to be the next CEO of a big Wall Street bank. And number one, come on. And number two, this person on Twitter, again, I apologize, said, "Oh, their idea of diversity is that one of these guys has a receding hairline." And you're like, "Come on, man."
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
It was just, it's so tone deaf. It has to be said here, in J.P. Morgan's defense, they did the same thing last week, except it's two women now who are lined up to be the next CEO of J.P. Morgan. So, you know, some get it and some don't. And clearly Morgan Stanley just doesn't, which is just
– and couldn't even find one. Couldn't even find one.
Couldn't even.
In a slate of four.
Just honestly couldn't be bothered, right? Could not be bothered.
Yeah. Tells you a lot. Yep. Citigroup just got a woman CEO. Yeah, it's not that hard, guys.
Yeah, they did. We're trying to get a sit down with her. It's not hard. They're out there. You know, I mean, come on, man. Item number two, which is not quite the relief for the Postal Service that we've been talking about being needed on this podcast, but there is a bipartisan bill moving through both chambers, which is to say, even in the sharply divided Senate, this thing has a chance to relieve the Postal Service of some of its $188 billion in financial obligations, which is an interesting footnote that Congress is the one who put those financial obligations on them because they decided they had to fully fund their pension costs. And it also will increase – not increase. It will make better mail delivery time. So there's real promise to save the post office. It does not, however, this bill do anything about the current boss of the Postal Service, Louis DeJoy, who we've talked about many times on this podcast, although it does note that two of Biden's nominees were just cleared for the Board of Governors, and the Board of Governors of the Postal Service is, of course, who names the Postmaster General. And DeJoy, of course, not only advocating slowing down mail delivery, but also being in direct competition in his personal business with the U.S. Postal Service is a challenge, shall we say. So there's better times ahead for the Postal Service if this thing passes, although management is still an issue. And I just thought we should all be on top of that because we've talked about it a bunch.
Yeah, seriously. Stay on top of the post office, which apparently has not been able to deliver, has not come, according to the Washington Post, quote, has not come close to meeting its on-time delivery goals since July.
Totally. It's craziness. So just super quick from the Slack, Tony Wagner helping me out. It was Mark Gongloff at I think he's at Bloomberg, right? He's a contributing opinion guy for Bloomberg. He's the one with the receding hairline joke, which is true.
Oh, yeah. That's funny.
Yo-yos all lined up.
And only slightly, even then, only slightly.
Yeah, just a
otherwise,
little bit. Just a little bit. Otherwise, it's just 55-year-old white guys.
Just a sea of how it's always been. Thank you. Thanks, Drew. Thanks.
Nicely done, Drew Jostad. All right.
Well played.
Okay. So I'll go first. It's another in my continuing series of, people who made a life change and are writing about it. Lessons, perhaps, for those in the audience. Uh-huh. Chris Bosh, former NBA star, is profiled in the Wall Street Journal. In a really nice piece about how his NBA career, right, the guy's an 11-time All-Star, his NBA career came to a screeching halt in 2015. He had no idea what was going on, and then he was just out of the game that he had trained for his entire life, played his entire life. And it's just a really interesting reflection on getting ready for the next step. And this is a piece with the Kenny Mayne piece in the LA Times from a couple of days ago about what happens when it's time to move on. And I just thought that was it's just a really nice piece, depending on where you are and your mental status.
I know. Where are we going with this, buddy? What do you want?
We're not going anywhere. We're going right here.
He's just staying right acknowledging here. A trend. There is a trend of of this.
That's right.
Yep. I mean, it is a time of change, you know, without a doubt. It is a time of change, and you can just sort of feel that globally. It's a turning point in history. It's all of those things. And it is interesting that this is kind of like the genre that is happening right now.
Exactly.
My Make Me Smile today is so shallow, but so hilarious because it came up in our Make Me Smart meeting today because I did notice that everybody was going crazy about the fact that Prince William got his first shot, mainly because we were all like, I'm sorry, what now? He just got his first shot today? And then Bridget Bodner, who I'm just outing, was like, yeah, but did you see his guns? and I had not. And then I noticed that it was totally trending. And there was even like, of course, a write-up about it in HuffPo about Twitter users obsessing about Prince William's vaccination gun show. Because that guy is pretty buff for like a balding prince.
I think the lighting is helping him out quite a bit here, could I just say?
I think
there's some shadow there that's helping him out. Okay.
But there's some veininess at the top. Like he's like a little baby rock arm.
All right, I'm out.
I don't know. I'm out. There's some guns. This guy's putting on a gun show. Getting his shot. Good for him. You would think princes could have done that sooner. That's awesome. Okay, that's it. We are leaving.
And on that note, we are going to move on. Holy cow. So, a couple of things. Number one, we're leaving. Number two, sign up for our newsletter, would you? It's the Make Me Smart newsletter. Eric Phillips writes it, as we say, every day. This week, it's a closer look at that Flamin' Hot Cheetos story, which is kind of wild, actually, on like 14 different levels. I believe you can sign up at Make Me Smart. Maybe it's marketplace.org/newsletters. I'm going to say that's it. All right.
Yep.
I'm gonna
good guess.
The
good
Slack
guess.
Channel to correct me. Yeah.
We'll be back tomorrow for Economics on Tap in the YouTube live stream. I'm pondering perhaps like a sort of bourbon lemonade thing because of all the horse racing stuff that's been in the news. I don't know. Sounds good though, right? Yeah. That is, start planning your drinks now, your mocktails, your cocktails, your coffee, depending on where in the world you're joining us from. 3:30 Pacific, 6:30 Eastern. That's all the math we can do on the time zones. The rest is up to you.
Right.
It really is. For some reason, Central Time is like impossible for me.
Yeah. St. Louis? Forget it. Kimberly Adams, I'm really sorry. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital producer and finder of things that I say randomly on the show and then puts them in the Slack channel and saves me. Erica Phillips writes our newsletters, also our Make Me Smart explainers.
Today's program was engineered by the always delightful Drew Jostad, who I know is looking forward to co-starring tomorrow in Half Full, Half Empty. Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Donna Tam is the senior producer, squeaking in that Flamin' Hot Cheetos promo under the wire.
Yep.
The executive director of On Demand is Santara Nieves. I love the breadth of coverage.
You know,
that happens here. We got it all.
We do a little bit of everything. And there we are. And there we are.
Love it. Love it.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.